This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It's been a long week of debate and negotiations in the halls of the North Carolina legislature. Lawmakers worked hard to push through bills before last night's deadline. Republicans were able to pass the top items on their agenda, and the GOP majority found support among some Democratic House lawmakers who crossed party lines to back the budget. Governor Perdue has threatened to veto the budget because of steep cuts to education. WUNC Capitol Bureau reporter Jessica Jones joins us now to tell us more. Hello, Jessica.
Hey, Frank.
Tell us about this week, the infamous crossover week. What goes on?
That's right. Well, last night was the deadline for what they call crossover, and that's when bills have to be passed either by the House or Senate in order for them to stay alive through the 2012 session. So in the last 2 weeks, there have been a lot of late nights, darker circles under my eyes, as there's been this increasing rush to get those bills through.
Let's talk about some of those bills, many of them on the GOP agenda. They announced it going in. What were the top bills? How much of it has made its way through?
Well, Republicans who were in control for both chambers for the first time in more than a century had a list of a number of things that they wanted to accomplish. That list included requiring voters to take a photo ID with them to the polls, funding education, this is what the Republicans said, in the classroom and cutting down on bureaucracy, and eliminating the cap on charter schools. And these are not unusual goals that, you know, across the country that are held by Republicans in state legislatures. And I would also say another issue that lawmakers, that some Republican lawmakers here were interested in was voting to establish a 24-hour waiting period before a woman is able to obtain an abortion. But I would say that wasn't part of the official list of goals that Republicans set out with.
Well, let's start right there with that particular item, abortion and Planned Parenthood, both affected by the legislation.
Right. So this bill would require a 24-hour waiting period for the first time before a woman would be able to obtain an abortion. It would also require that a woman would have to receive an ultrasound before getting an abortion. That's not necessarily unusual. I know that actually I was told by Planned Parenthood that at clinics across the state now they do offer women the option of getting an ultrasound. But what is unusual about this measure is the amount of and level of counseling, including, you know, it would be official state counseling about all kinds of options that a woman could resort to besides having an abortion, and she would be required to receive that beforehand. And I think another thing that has raised ire, I guess, in some quarters is the involvement of physicians and technicians who would be helping with that abortion. They would need to be directly involved with that counseling with a prospective patient.
What are some of the other restrictions or requirements about that counseling? Who can do it? Who can't do it?
Well, it's all connected to the procedure and people who are giving the procedure. And so it would all be state mandated. And for example, I should also point out that when a woman is supposed to receive the ultrasound, it's not just that she's offered the opportunity to have the ultrasound, but the person who provides the ultrasound must be connected to the procedure. You can't get it from someone else who's not, you know, in this chain of events. And the technician or physician would have to describe the fetus, you know, really talk about it at a level of detail that, you know, that definitely rubs people who are opposed to this bill the wrong way.
And it may not be common now. Let's talk about voter registration again. Right now, to vote, the legislation would require photo ID.
It would require photo ID, and that's really the biggest sticking point. Right here in North Carolina, voters are not required to take a photo ID with them in the polls. So that would be a big change, and I think it's one of about eight under the bill. People would be required to take a photo ID, you know, one of, I think, eight forms with them to the polls. And there's been an enormous debate about this because Republicans have been insisting that there's a need to prove that you are who you say you are when you're at the polls, even though instances of voter fraud have been quite small in North Carolina, but that's what they're insisting. But Democrats who are opposed to the bill have cast this in all kinds of ways. For example, last night there was a heated debate in the House about how from many African American members who said this is a throwback to Jim Crow. You know, we've spent our lives walking on back roads and using our own cars to make sure that we could transport people to the polls so that they voted, and this is going to set us back. So that just gives you a sense of the tenor of the debate. It's been very heated.
Is there an argument that it's harder for one segment of the population than another to get photo ID? Is it harder for African Americans? Is it harder for people who are poor to get photo ID?
Well, what Democrats say is that many people who do not have a current photo ID or would find it difficult to get one tend to vote Democratic. And we've heard that a lot. So, for example, the elderly women, African Americans, what they're suggesting is they would be more likely to vote Democratic. And this is something that we've seen in state legislatures across the country. There's a national drive by Republicans in many state houses to do this. So here in North Carolina, it's not that unusual taken in a national context.
What about the window for early voting? Does that change?
There has been a lot of talk about that. That wasn't in the voter ID bill, but certainly some Republican leaders in the state house have talked about how they would like to narrow that window.
And the cap on charter schools as we move into the area of education. Both houses have approved lifting the cap on charter schools. Tell us what that would do if it's signed into law.
Well, this has been a fascinating issue to follow throughout the session because it's been really interesting to track its evolution. Earlier in the session, Republicans were all for it, and they still are for the most part. Democrats were vehemently against it. Democratic leaders in both the House and the Senate spoke out against it, but it passed in the Senate unanimously last night, and with a majority in the House. So there's been a real change in how state politicians feel about it. And I guess I would say that the bill that was voted on was sharply reduced. There were lots of things taken out of it that Democrats didn't like. And I would say the main thing was that the previous long form version would have created a board that would have had control over charter schools, and it would have been largely independent of the Department of Public Instruction. And now in this version, it would be under the oversight of the Department of Public Instruction. And I think Democrats felt that they could get behind that.
So it is still supervised in the same way. It's a public school. It gets public money in the same way.
Right.
It's not at all a voucher program. It's not like an individual gets the money. Money goes right to the school.
Exactly.
So let's talk more about schools. Governor Perdue has not said that she would veto that bill. She has suggested she may veto the budget, and that's mostly for cuts in education spending. Tell us about the budget.
Correct. Well, we know that she doesn't like it. Her spokeswoman has said, actually, in reference to charter schools, that she's hinted that the governor likes that one. No hints, however, about the budget. We know that the governor has not been pleased with it. She's got a few more days to let that budget sit on her desk before it would automatically become law. And what has she been doing recently? She's been touring different school districts, talking to superintendents and principals and teachers about how the cuts in this budget would affect them. So she's clearly taking the time to make sure that people know that she's out there.
The governor's office has said that the cuts to education and early childhood education will result in the loss of 9,000 jobs at the elementary and secondary level, perhaps 3,200 at the university level. A lot of jobs lost and a lot of making up to do in terms of the years lost in quality of education. That's been their position so far. And what do you think she's waiting for? When will we know what the governor's going to do?
It's hard to say. I really don't know. This year has been such a different year, again, with Republicans in power in both chambers. I think all bets are off. Everything has changed. And I think everyone is waiting to see what the governor will do, and no one really knows.
If it had been a straight party line vote, that veto would have sustained had the governor promised to do that. The fact is that five Democrats in the House joined the Republicans, meaning if there's a veto and if they stay on that side of the aisle for the vote, the veto would be overturned.
Correct. And this is what makes this story actually such a good story, because as you and I were talking before, those five House Democrats,
Well, it puts you in a position, it seems to me, of being able at least to log roll politically, both on the front end when you're looking at your Republican colleagues for what might help your district. And we've already seen reports of some of the benefits to individual members' districts. And then when the Democrats come knocking saying, hey, the veto vote is coming up, you're once again in a pretty good position of power. So there have been at least suggestions that a wise politician could use this to their advantage.
That's right. And those five Democrats are in a very interesting position, and they're being watched very, very, very closely.
We will watch the vote and the next couple of weeks or the next few days very closely. The veto deadline is Tuesday. After that, the budget goes into law with or without the governor's signature.
Correct.
Jessica, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jessica Jones, WUNC's Capital Bureau reporter. Coming up, artist Jane Lillian Vance talks about her journey to Tibet and the artistic results. We'll hear about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Do stay with us.